Welcome to the Stop Making Your Bed podcast, the only show in where we question the functionality of our daily lives to uncover what works for us, starting with the most important element each and every day, not making your bed. Today, I'm thrilled to bring to you a conversation I know will be a game changer for every single person listening. Regardless of your age or gender, this conversation will either benefit you directly, help you better understand a loved one, friend, or even a coworker. I urge you to listen to the entire episode and share it with anyone you think would benefit from this conversation. I know in my experience, I knew nothing about what we're going to discuss today until I was in it. Why? Because women's health has always been and still is a taboo topic. Growing up, my mum told me stories of having to buy menstrual pads from the shop that had been wrapped in newspaper so the checkout clerk wouldn't be embarrassed, to putting her foot down at the hospital because she wanted my dad in the delivery room, and this was 1980. Thankfully, puberty, pregnancy, and childbirth in my lifetime have become significantly more open conversations than my mum experienced. And thankfully, my daughter's experience is significantly better than my own. However, one element that's lagging behind and catching so many of us off guard is the menopause journey. I know from conversations with friends, they feel the societal judgment of women aging contributes to this greatly. Add in a severe lack of research, very limited funding, and story after story of women's symptoms being misdiagnosed or worse, ignored by their own doctors. It's so frustrating you want to scream. Women are wading through this phase of life without being adequately supported, and it's not good enough. Today's guest on the Stop Making Your Bed podcast is someone I know we will all benefit greatly from listening to. She is known as the menopause dietitian who works in the perimenopause, menopause, and hormone space. With over two decades of experience in the health and fitness space, she offers a guiding hand during the complex phase we all go through. She understands the unique nutritional needs that accompany this phase of our lives. And today we get to hear from her. Please welcome to the podcast the menopause dietitian, Lisa Donaldson. Welcome.
Thank you. What a beautiful introduction.
No, we're very well deserved, and I really appreciate you having this conversation with me today.
I can't wait to get into it. And there were so many things that you said in that introduction that are shocking.
Yes.
And we need to, you know, move past that. We are in an age where we need to, you know, look at ourselves as women and what we can bring to the table and not be ashamed or, you know, bury our head in the sand anymore. It's time to talk about the things that are impacting us. And you're so right when you mentioned that the evidence out there is so limited in this, because so much of the medical fraternity have just looked at men, young men in studies, and there's not enough around women in our age bracket. So look, let's get into this and let's chat.
Thank you so much. So let's just talk. One of the things, so my listeners need to understand, I've hit that perimenopause stage and I learned more from TikTok than I did from my GP. So I'm fascinated by this subject. But let's start with some basics. Can you please explain the difference between perimenopause and menopause for us?
Okay, so menopause is easy.
Yep.
That's after 12 months of no menstrual cycle. So once you've passed that 12 months, you are in menopause.
Okay.
There's no more periods to come. You have hit menopause. It's the lead up. I feel like perimenopause is a new term that's just sort of emerged in the last few years in terms of like just common vernacular. And so we're now talking about perimenopause, and it's the lead up to the final stage, which is menopause. And perimenopause is, it is a rolling wave of hormones that send us to a point that we think we're going crazy because it's affecting our mood, it's affecting our body, it's affecting so much about us as women that it's quite shocking. I'm now 45, and the first sign for me that something weird was going on was heart palpitations.
Amazing.
And I thought, I'm like, Maybe it was the COVID vaccine. Maybe I'm one of those people who can't have the COVID vaccine. My heart feels funny. And so I had to wear a Holter monitor. I was like, what's going on with my heart? My mother had just passed away. I'm like, is it linked to stress? But this heart palpitation, from what we can determine, is linked to my start of perimenopause itself.
That's incredible.
And so our body is hugely influenced by estrogen in particular, because we have estrogen receptors all over our body and internally within our physiology, and it affects so much of every single part of our body that you would not believe.
So I feel that we have been, we have a lack of understanding. So when I was growing up, that was menopause. There was no perimenopause. But the reality is menopause is when we're done.
When we're done.
Okay.
So after 12 months of no period, that is menopause.
So what age do we expect to start perimenopause on average?
Every woman is very different. And so this is where it can get very complex in trying to understand each and every one of us, because what your best friend might experience might be completely different to you. And so some women might start as early as 35.
Okay.
And as late as 55, the perimenopause journey.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very individual. And it's often not linked to when your period starts either.
Okay. So there's no way to track.
There's no way to predict. And so we start to notice that we don't feel right.
Okay.
Our brain might be a little bit off. We don't feel right within ourselves. And when you start to feel like, oh, why do I feel this way? Why is this happening? Start to think maybe, if you're within the 35 to 55 bracket, that this might be the start of perimenopause for you.
Okay. So it could be quite, I mean, some people get their periods at 9, some people are 16.
Yes.
So we accept that time frame.
Yes.
But I feel that if you're presenting with symptoms and you're 35,
mm-mm,
it'd be quite difficult to someone to listen to you that this is happening to me.
That's right. And our GPs still aren't quite equipped to cater for us, the average GP that you go to.
Yeah.
And you might go to your GP and be like, you know, I'm really stressed out. I'm feeling very anxious at the moment. You know, all this is happening. And they might put you on antidepressants.
Yes.
Or take a route that isn't actually classified under the perimenopause banner. So our GPs have to start getting upskilled as well.
Yeah.
There are some marvelous GPs out there who work in women's health.
Yeah.
But the average GP, you know, you've really got to be careful about who you select.
So we need to come into those appointments with knowledge.
Yes.
Which is where I felt I really lacked. And I was listening and thinking, this is still not right. And you haven't hit what's really happening to me. It's hard to explain.
Mm.
So what are the symptoms that we could sort of look out for that you would see in perimenopause that are quite common?
Yeah, quite common ones are things like getting those hot flashes.
Yeah.
And even just a change in your periods, your cycle.
Okay. Yep.
Perhaps your periods are suddenly getting really heavy,
yep,
or really light. For some people, it's the itchy skin.
Yes. And night sweats for me was the big thing. I'm thinking, what is going on? Mm-hmm. And they tried to link it to a medication I was taking. It was like, this didn't happen before.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Insomnia for some ladies. Really like lack of sleep, waking up in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
What's going on there? And so for each woman, the symptoms can be very different.
Okay.
But it's good to be mindful of how it might present for you.
Okay.
And so we need to be aware, read a lot, follow, you know, even you said you learnt a lot from TikTok.
I did.
I feel like bubbling is this great excitement about learning more about perimenopause at the moment, and all power to us women, so
yes,
that we can, whatever format that we learn in, at least it's just opening our eyes to possible symptoms and things like that.
And I do feel there's a stigma behind that menopause, as I mentioned in the introduction,
as
we're done. We're off the shelf. We're not sort of that fertile young woman, which is desired by, you know, well, certainly in our generation growing up, that was the be all and end all. And as you got older, you were just forgotten about, especially
become invisible.
Invisible woman syndrome. Mm. So we often don't discuss it because we're put into that category, which is the complete opposite.
Mm.
So I think that the discussions aren't happening is because we it's an age discussion.
Mm.
And that's uncomfortable for a lot of people.
Yes. I think the reason that I started delving into this was around the time I knew I was going to lose my mother. So she died from cancer.
I'm so sorry.
And I felt like she won't be here to guide me through this. And so I just started doing a lot of reading about it. And this was 2 years ago, lost mum about 14 months ago. So I started reading about it just to get myself prepared for when she wasn't here anymore.
Yeah.
And so I feel like as women, we need to take matters into our own hands.
Absolutely.
And to learn as much as we can. Because as I said, a lot of research around human physiology is around young males, not around women in this age bracket. Yes, there are some studies, but not enough, not enough to fill the gaps. We need to talk to each other.
Yes.
I had one of my friends is down from Darwin. She lives up north and us girls all had dinner together last night. And I said, I was doing this podcast today. And right away, they're like, what is it about? I'm like, oh, we're going to be talking about perimenopause. Right away, all four of us started chatting about, well, where are you at? And where are you at? Oh, have you had this symptom? I've had none of that. And so between us, we were sharing what's going on with us. And together, we had a discussion.
Yeah.
The first time as a group of friends that we've done that. And I was like, this is great.
Oh, it's absolutely unbelievable. Because I started asking my mum, but she had a hysterectomy at 35. So she couldn't give me that experience or that knowledge. So I've had to go to arts, and I had dinner with them the other night, and I asked every question I could. And as you said, every experience was different.
Mm-hmm.
But it's relatable and it's comfortable, whereas they've never been asked that question.
And I feel like we're moving into this era where it's okay for us to chat and not be embarrassed.
Yeah.
Or not try to hide it or like veil it in secrecy.
Absolutely.
Open up the conversation. Have these chats with your friends, even with, you know, people that you might meet. I was going to say strangers, but, you know.
Yeah, in the workplace and things like that. It's just relatable. I think that, as I said, we've really gotten better with pregnancy and miscarriage. And I do believe even that using that word now, that term is so important, whereas even in my generation, when I first got pregnant, you could not tell anyone before 12 weeks because even using the word miscarriage was just not done. It's just taboo.
Mm.
So I think we've made such progress, but this element we have not. It is just discussed. I definitely urge everybody to talk to the people in their lives. And I feel that my husband had no concept when I mentioned the words perimenopause. He went, uh-oh. And I went, no, it's not uh-oh. It's just the next phase. It's like getting pregnant.
Mm-mm.
But you're in it, kiddo. We're in this together. You have to go through this with me.
That's right. And it can be a rude shock for our partners.
Yes.
You know, all of a
what
sudden we
mean?
Might be a bit anxious or moody or, you know, hot or ooh.
Angry.
I think
the divorce rate goes up.
I think it does. But we don't even know what's going on with our body.
No.
We've not experienced this before.
No.
So all of a sudden it might be like, oh, like what's this tingling on my skin?
Absolutely.
Oh, what's this heart palpitation?
And sexual intercourse can hurt.
Yes.
We don't discuss anything related to menopause and sex
and
how our bodies change just as like they did with puberty, they change again.
Yes.
And what does that mean? And not being able to express that to your partner must be very stressful.
Mm.
Yeah.
So it's, I guess, really important for us to not only chat with our girlfriends, but to chat with our partners and just let them know that, you know, we're not quite right.
No.
Because our body's changing, our hormones are all over the shop.
That's right.
And hopefully they understand that because they know, you know, from their own mothers or maybe their sisters or, you know, from other, you know, opening the discussion.
Absolutely.
Hopefully partners listen to this right now.
I'm urging everyone to share this with their partner.
Mm.
Yeah.
Because we don't know.
And we need a guiding hand in all different areas, from the GP and people like yourself in nutrition and how we're going to handle this and how we work out and exercise. And you really need a team behind you.
Yes.
And an understanding that this is happening. We don't know how long it's going to go on for.
Exactly.
It's scariest for us.
Yes.
But opening that conversation, having a narrative is going to make it easier on us, I think, in terms of our mental health.
Yes.
And I'm terrified of the concept that our mental health suffers the most.
Yes. Yeah. And that is a real worry.
Yeah.
And that's when I mentioned before that often GPs think, well, you need to go on an antidepressant.
That happened to me. This is why I'm nodding furiously. They put me on an antidepressant and I was never depressed.
Mm.
I had undiagnosed ADHD that went ballistic when I hit perimenopause. And I find it. The conversations that I'm having with people is their diagnosis for ADHD has come in later in life because it was, again, there was no research for women with ADHD.
Mm-mm.
But if you track it, my ADHD was the worst when I hit puberty. after I had a baby, mm-hmm. and now I've hit perimenopause. And it wasn't until they tried to put me on an antidepressant that didn't work. They went, maybe something else is wrong. And I then was able to be diagnosed with ADHD. Then they did the perimenopause.
This process of elimination.
But the reality is it wasn't until I was misdiagnosed with depression that we got to go through that. But that was a 2-year process.
Mm.
And it was terrifying.
Yes. Yeah. It's really interesting to me that you said that, you know, at the start of puberty, things were heightened for you.
Yes.
And now again, heightened for you.
Yeah.
And in my experience, not ADHD, but migraines.
Oh, wow.
I had extreme migraines going through puberty, like debilitating. Ooh. And now I'm here. All of a sudden, I'm getting migraines again. It's that fluctuation, those waves in the hormones.
Yes.
And so it's interesting to reflect on how you were during those very early formative stages where you're going through puberty, what really shone at that point or stood out.
That's a great piece of advice.
And then, oh, this is happening again now. And this is an area of unknown for us personally. In the same way as puberty was kind of scary and strange, what's going on here? We're at that point again.
It is. It feels exactly the same.
Mm.
Yeah.
And so we need to give ourselves a little bit of grace and to just be patient with ourselves and think we're going to get through this.
Yeah.
The problem is, how long is our perimenopause going to go for? As you said, it can be a decade. It could be a couple of years for some people. And so we just have to ride the wave, look after each other as, you know, sisters in this together.
Yeah.
And give ourselves some grace.
Okay, so let's get onto the topic at hand.
Mm-mm.
What can we do outside of that GP space
mm.
to take care of ourselves either before we get in that phase for our younger listeners,
mm.
our listeners who are currently in it?
Mm.
What can we do to, yes, we can understand that we need to track our symptoms, have conversations with our families and GPs, but we can take ownership of what we can control.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yes. Whenever a woman comes into my clinic, I get them to think about the chair they're sitting on. We're sitting on a chair now that's got four legs. If I was to pull any one of these four legs off my chair, I'd end up on the floor.
Yeah.
I'd be in a pretty ridiculous space. The four legs are holding me up right now in this chair. They're all even legs. Everything's steady on my chair. This is like our vitality, our wellness, and our health. What are the four legs holding me up in terms of my vitality, wellness, and health? It's not just our nutrition. It's our fitness, how much we move. It's our sleep and also our stress. So no matter where you are in life, whether you are perimenopausal, postmenopausal, if you are not even in that realm, I get every client to think about the four things that are holding up their wellness and to rate them. What's your nutrition like? Oh, you know, I eat pretty well. I give that an 8 out of 10. Oh, my stress. Oh, it's pretty bad. I'd give that like a 2 out of 10. It's working out what is not in balance for that individual and honing in on that.
Okay.
All of those things, our sleep, our stress, our fitness, all have an impact on our nutrition. If we are very sleep deprived, I have a 3-year-old who vomited yesterday morning at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Gosh, I'm so sorry.
Here I am 45 with a 3-year-old. That's a whole other story. So on those days where I'm just like, wow, my sleep is currently not something I am in control of.
Yeah.
Because I have a toddler and I'm also perimenopausal, which, you know, gives me some insomnia as
yes.
well. My sleep, my leg on my chair for sleep is gone. Really, it's barely there. It's rocking all over the place. So I need to think the other three aspects I've got to keep solid. I've got to make sure that I'm eating really well. That's a controllable for me.
Yeah.
I need to make sure that I'm moving and keeping myself as fit as possible. That's a controllable for me. My stress, I feel like I'm pretty good in that space and I can control that. So even when I've got a really shaky sleep leg on my chair, I'm going to be okay.
Yeah.
Because I've got the other three supporting me.
Excellent.
So wherever you are in your life cycle, there are four key elements. Think of it as four legs on a chair or four legs on a table. All of them need to hold you up because as soon as one of those is out of whack, you're on the floor.
Absolutely. And I think we don't prioritize ourselves as it is.
No.
Then you've all of a sudden, you can have four wonky legs on that chair.
You can.
And it's, where do you start?
And bringing it back to perimenopause and that stress leg, our stress leg is kind of shaky in terms of our hormones because the drop in our hormones can really affect our mood, can increase our anxiety. So already that's a little bit of a shaky leg.
Yeah.
But in this phase of our life, we might be running a business.
Absolutely.
We might be carrying the whole mental load of our family, whether it be, you know, what to do with the kids, with their school programs and, you know, all of
and
that.
Aging parents.
Aging parents. All of that. So we have to really find time for ourselves and to be kind to ourselves and to manage our stress.
And I think that that conversation comes in with your family. It's not a matter of I want to do this. You have to do this.
Yes.
Because otherwise going through this next phase is beyond difficult, almost impossible for some people.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so my dad, who's also passed away, I've lost both my parents. He used to say, a problem shared is a problem halved.
Yeah.
And so if you cannot have a conversation with your partner or your friends, finding a team, a therapist, psychologist, someone that you can connect with and offload and bounce ideas off can be a support for that shaky leg.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's really important that when people start to think about their health, it's not just about the food and the fitness, but give some time and consideration to that sleep and that stress.
That stress. And I think that would be the biggest thing for most listeners.
Yeah.
Is that sleep and that stress.
That's right. And when we're sleep deprived and we're stressed to the eyeballs, we crave sugar.
Oh, yes, we
energy.
Do. And alcohol.
Yes.
You want that glass of wine. And what I've learnt recently through my journey is my body doesn't process it like it used to.
Mm.
Once I hit perimenopause, it doesn't work for me any longer. So I think I had my last drink on Christmas Day and I thought to myself, this doesn't taste great. This doesn't feel great.
Mm.
And I didn't consciously go, I'm not drinking any longer. I just stopped and I had a conversation with my doctor and she said that is so common because you are going through such change. What used to work will no longer work and you've got to find a new path.
And you think about alcohol, it might help you relax for a moment, but it can actually increase anxiety. It can lead to hot flashes.
Yes.
The alcohol aspect is really interesting and I feel like I'd love to read some great research around alcohol for women in perimenopause and what it's actually doing to us from a mental perspective, from a hot flash perspective.
And night sweat perspective because your liver wakes you up. It's trying to break down that alcohol, wakes you up again.
Yes.
Yeah. And the low mood in the morning, so you're looking for a sugary hit which sets you off for the whole day.
And so think of women in our age group, you know, often we wake up with coffee. I just had a coffee then.
Me too.
I needed, you know, I do have my morning coffee. Yes. I need that. But we charge up our body with a coffee in the morning and some of us will wind down with alcohol at night.
Yeah.
And what are we doing? We're really pushing our body to a heightened state that's perhaps not as natural as we would like.
Yeah.
And so our body's just going, how am I going to deal with all of this? And so we really need to think about the quality of what we're putting into our body.
Mm.
And I'm not going to guilt anyone into not having a cup of coffee. I just had, you know, a large soy latte.
That's right.
You know, I loved it. I needed it. But we have to really be mindful about what we consume across the course of the day.
So one of the interesting things I spoke to my aunts about was the family dinner and how that didn't suit them through that phase because the family's still eating, the kids are young, they might even have nuggets on one night or they're having pasta because you've got teenagers who are playing sport and the different elements of everyone's nutrition within your own family. And you are the last person you think about when you're cooking that family.
Of course.
Or even just shopping. Or, and when one of my aunt's husband cooks and has always cooked my uncle, but he checks in with her what she wants for dinner, but she always caters to what the family would eat.
Of course.
So we don't put ourselves first in that aspect of planning meals, shopping for meals and prepping meals.
Mm.
And it's not suited to what we actually do need in this space.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so we want our family to eat and to enjoy their food and not be like, yuck, I don't want to eat that. But in this phase, it's really important that we manage our carbohydrate intake and that we don't eat lots of highly refined carbs, so the white stuff. That leads to an increase in insulin resistance, but also inflammation, leads our blood glucose levels on these peaks and troughs and, you know, it's not good for us.
No.
And it doesn't mean that we can't have carbohydrate. We need carbs. Whole grains and, you know, starchy vegetables are great for our gut and for our, you know, being able to poo properly.
Yeah, which also is affected during perimenopause. Our bowels and our digest food is affected.
It really is. Yeah. Our gut microbiome changes. The smoothed muscle within our gut changes as well.
Yeah.
So many things change. So we can't cut carbs. I'm not saying cut carbs out, but we have to be mindful about the carbs that we're choosing.
Correct.
And keep them balanced across the course of the day.
Yeah.
One thing that's really stood out for me in terms of our macronutrients is the value of protein and healthy fats during this phase.
So this is what I wanted to discuss with you. So I train, like weight train, love the gym, work out really, really hard.
Mm.
I wasn't eating protein correctly. Mm. I wasn't eating enough carbohydrates.
Mm.
So women quite often drop protein.
Mm.
It's not sort of something we think about. Mm. The eggs and all the protein powders and whatever. It's just not in our dialogue. It's just a quick breakfast and off we go. And how important the healthy fats were as well, because my generation, we grew up with
low fat
yogurt. It was full of sugar.
I remember. We're of the same generation.
Aerobics and Diet Coke, and my mum only ate low fat everything.
I understand.
Disregarded sugar. Like it was,
And it's funny, I remember as a child reading my cornflake box and seeing that I was like, oh, fat's bad.
Yes, bad.
Oh, cornflakes. Oh, they've got hardly any fat in them. They're safe.
I live on cornflakes.
Look, I remember.
And shaped milk.
Oh, my gosh. And, you know, I think what we have learnt, you know, from the 80s where we went low fat, you know, during the 80s going low fat, people ate lots of carbs because a huge baguette is fat-free, virtually.
Yeah.
Pasta is fat-free. Throughout the 1980s, we ate a lot of carbohydrates because they were fat-free. And then we moved into the 90s. As a global community, we became bigger.
Yes.
We became overweight. And then we're like in the 90s, oh, carbs are the problem.
Carbs were, and we weren't allowed to eat eggs either. It was cholesterol. Carbs,
And cholesterol.
Yes.
And so then in the 90s, we're like, oh, Jennifer Aniston, she's gone on this Atkins and Zone diet. Let's cut carbs. And then we were overeating protein. And
yes,
the key is no one macronutrient is bad.
Mm-hmm.
We need to come back to this place where we're just like, actually, all the macronutrients are required for some aspect within our body.
Yeah.
And so when we look at carbs, it's not the fat that we're worried about because, you know, the carbs are basically fat-free. So that messaging in the 80s was terrible. But we've got to opt for things that are high in fiber, have whole grains, grit in there for our gut, which is really important and valuable and keeps us full and satisfied, fuels our brain, fuels our muscle glycogen.
Mm.
We need to think about protein at this phase for stopping sarcopenia, which is muscle wastage.
Okay.
As our estrogen declines, our ability to hold on to our muscle is a little bit harder. We've got to do things like strength training.
Yeah.
We've got to replenish our muscles with good quality protein.
Okay.
And so understanding protein as rebuilding all those fibers, every time we do strength training and all of that, we've got to use protein to help prevent sarcopenia, which is just muscle wastage. Which
something
occurs.
I didn't know.
Mm.
So here's me working out, thinking I'm doing the right thing as I would have done in my 20s.
Of course.
But it's different for my body now. My body requires so much more.
Do you know what? I worked in the fitness industry for a decade, and people come to a gym and they're like, I need to lose weight. I've got to work out more and I've got to eat less if I'm going to change my body. When we're in this phase, that messaging of like working out more, you know, run more, do a marathon now, whatever it is, and eat less is not going to work for our body.
No.
There is no magic bullet to change what is happening to us. And we have to take it all from a very individual level as well.
Absolutely.
And so, coming back to those macronutrients, we need our carbs for our brain,
yeah,
our brain health, the brain fog, the brain. Primary fuel for the brain is carbohydrate.
Okay.
So women will be like, I need to lose weight. I'm going to cut the carbs. They cut the carbs for a week or two. Their brain starts to get a bit hazy. They step on the scales and they're like, oh, I've lost weight.
Yeah.
I've lost weight because I've cut carbs. Every glucose molecule within our body holds on to water.
Okay.
When we don't replenish our muscle glycogen after we're training really hard, what happens is we also lose water weight because that muscle, the glycogen holds on to the water. We're not carrying that because we haven't replenished it and it hasn't attracted the water to the glycogen. So people after a week or two just like, look at this weight I'm losing.
Fat, I've done the right thing.
I've got to keep this up because look at the scales. But what's happened is you've probably lost your muscle glycogen because you've not replenished it and a lot of water weight. And so for some reason, people just think low carb is the way to go.
Yeah. And I think at this age too, we get what around our stomach, which I've heard referred to the term bread basket.
Right.
So that role that we get. Yes. And so in that mentality, even that term makes us think bread, that's bad. Carbohydrates are bad.
Yes.
When the reality is it's not that.
No.
Yeah.
And so what happens in perimenopause is this thickening. So we do start to get bigger around the middle.
Okay.
And also testosterone. Women don't realize that we carry testosterone within our bodies as well.
Yeah.
It's kind of thought of as the male hormone. But when you think about those three hormones, and we're quite aware that our estrogen and our progesterone start to drop. So the levels of all those hormones have changed. So what happens is that testosterone might sit a bit higher in relation to the estrogen and progesterone than it did before. So rather than being that beautiful pear shape, we start to become more of an apple shape, a bit like a man.
Yes.
Where they start to gain weight around the middle.
That is
like us as females as we enter this phase where our testosterone is sitting just a little bit higher. So we have this thickening around the middle, which can be very confronting for a woman who's always had a teeny tiny little waist and felt beautiful.
You're trying to get those jeans on.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it does. And so when we start to gain fat around our middle, high risk here. When you think about the middle, this is where our major organs live. And so visceral fat, internal fat around our organs leads to chronic disease.
Okay.
Things like diabetes, heart disease, insulin resistance, all of those scary things, all because we're gaining weight around our middle.
Mm-hmm.
Can we prevent it? Yes, we can,
okay,
to a degree.
Yeah.
But we need to be also forgiving of our body that this is just a change.
Yeah.
And it's okay to change in a way and to love our bodies regardless.
Absolutely. It's like after childbirth, your body changes and you do come to accept it. So the incidence of heart attacks in women during perimenopause and after we're in menopause is so high. And I'm only making an assumption here. It's because we've gained dangerous fats.
Yes. Yeah. So look, it's also linked to the hormones, how our body pumps our blood around the body, all sorts of different things. Both the combination of the hormones, the visceral fat.
Yeah.
The increase in heart disease in women during this age is significant.
Yes.
And it's one of those things, I think often people think about heart disease being a bit of a man thing.
I absolutely do. They do. Yes.
And because we're having these hormonal and physiological changes, it impacts women at a higher rate than we realize.
Yeah.
If we look at the statistics around heart disease as we cross into the menopause, we have an increased risk of heart disease just like men.
So we need to be looking at this in perimenopause as a priority. So when we're in menopause, that's not an issue it's an emergency. We need to know that we need to look after ourselves.
We need to look after our heart.
Yes.
And all our body.
Regardless of the bread basket not fitting in the jeans, that's it's significantly more important to look at the greater picture of what's happening in our bodies.
That's right. Yeah. The internal physiology. Yeah. What is happening there? And so when I look at all the diets across the world, and I've really looked at, have you ever heard of the green zones? No, blue zones. Sorry, there's a bit of brain fog.
I have had it mentioned to me by my children.
Yes.
But I don't understand.
So there are communities around the world that have the longest living humans. And I've investigated this. I'm like, why do these communities of people around the world live long? And a lot of those communities are in the Mediterranean. The Mediterranean diet is so supportive of healthy peri and postmenopausal. And if you think about it, it's got those healthy fats in it, those beautiful omega-3 fatty acids that come from oily fish, high in beautiful plant foods and things like that. So the Mediterranean diet is part of, you know, the blue zones. The other area that's really of interest to me in this phase is the Japanese diet. Mm. There's a community called the Okinawans, a Japanese community. They have some of the longest living humans on the planet. And so think about the Japanese diet as well. Again, oily fish, lots of plant food. And so we have to look at the diets of the communities that live long, beautiful lives. This is longevity, but not just longevity and being old and decrepit. Like, I don't know about you, but I want to live a life that is full of punch until the end.
Absolutely.
I don't want to be, you know, unable to move, my brain not functioning properly. I want to live the best life I can for as long as I can.
Yeah.
And so these communities, we've got to think, wow, what are they eating? And they are eating beautiful, healthy fats, high intake of plant food, and eating minimally processed foods. As Westerners, we eat too much processed food.
Yeah, it's convenient.
It is. And there's, you know, no guilt to the mums who are trying to manage and, you know, the packets of foods in the lunchboxes and whatever. Like, I get it. But we have to think, how can we strip it back to get as close to nature as possible?
Yeah.
And when we eat close to nature, our body thrives, no matter which phase of life we're in.
Yeah.
And so I think of all the diets that are out there, you know, we've gone through the keto phase and the paleo phase and all of those. But even if you think about those diets, what have they got in common that has been beneficial? Minimally processed foods. Mm. So just being aware of the intake of the packet foods that you consume.
Yeah.
Just pulling it back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can have a Tim Tam.
Of course.
But make a date with that Tim Tam a few times a week rather than every day.
Absolutely.
We are a product of what we do consistently.
Mm-hmm.
So our body is reflective of what we do consistently, not what we do once a week or a couple of times a week. Do the best that you can with your body, with the resources that you have in this economic crisis.
I know.
To be as healthy as you can be.
Yeah, absolutely. So what about water intake? Do we require more water as we hit perimenopause and menopause?
Oh my gosh, water. It's in perimenopause, our thirst also changes, which I just learned about.
I've experienced. This is why I'm asking.
And so we're sitting here with a glass little glass of water.
We should have a sip.
Let's have a sip. And so I'm not a thirsty person. I'm not. I've never been a thirsty person.
Yep.
Some people are particularly thirsty. And so I have to be very conscious of making sure that I hydrate myself.
Mm-hmm.
Coming back to that smooth muscle in our gut slowing down during this phase, if we're thinking our gut's not working quite right, I'm going to eat more fiber. I've heard fiber's going to help that. Eat lots of fiber and not actually think about our hydration. That fiber is going to turn into cement in your gut.
Oh, wow.
It needs enough hydration to move that waste out of the body. So, I mean, there's so many messages that we get from public health advocates about drinking 8 glasses of water a day. Now, I am smaller than a big Tongan male.
Yes.
I am bigger than a tiny little Japanese lady.
Yes.
Do we all need 8 glasses of water a day? Well, that's a good kind of general ballpark to hit. But if all the ladies and men listening write down 30 mils per kilogram as a general idea or a general new benchmark, 30 mils per kilogram, that is the baseline of what we need to keep ourselves hydrated in a state of rest.
Right.
So, you know, for someone who's around 60 kilos, that's 1.8 litres. For someone who's 100 kilos, that's 3 litres.
And a four exercise?
No, as your baseline.
As a base. Okay.
So you need to work out what you need as your baseline. Then in terms of exercise, yeah. it's a litre for every hour of exercise if you are sweating a lot. Oh. You have to replenish the water that you're losing via sweat. So most of us are probably a little bit dehydrated if we're not conscious about our water intake. Yeah. If you're not a thirsty person. I am that person.
Yeah.
I know lots of people who carry around a water bottle that have time listed on the water bottle just as reminders.
Just to keep drinking water.
Yes.
I had never actually heard of that formula, and it's absolutely brilliant because you are guesstimating all day. Have I had enough? I haven't had enough.
Yeah.
And of course, my husband's 130 kilos and 6'2".
Yes.
He's going to require more water than I'm going to require.
Exactly.
Except for, that's the 8 glasses of water. But then my son said to me, well, how big's the glass?
Mm.
And I'm like, oh, I've never really thought about that.
So, look, it's a great health message. Let's
try water, of course.
Try and tick off the 8 glasses. But does that actually suit your body?
Yeah.
So let's drill down a bit, work out what's 30 mils per kilogram of my body weight.
Yeah.
And then think, okay, I need 1.8 litres of water plus an extra whatever your weight is.
Yeah.
And that's a good little tip. And it's, again, a baseline. Keep an eye on your wee.
Yeah.
How dark is it? Is it straw colour or is it like bright yellow?
Well, at our age too, going to the loo is quite frequent. So adding extra water quite often can be terrifying because you've got to go to the loo all the time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And so I feel like for some people, like school teachers and people who can't run to the loo, you know, when they need to go.
And you would need to drink it before you go to bed because you don't want to wake up those 6 times with night sweats to go to the toilet. It's just,
That's right. Look, being a non-thirsty person myself, I make sure when I get up, I have a glass of water.
Mm-hmm.
When I have my lunch, dinner, any time I stop to eat, I top up with some more hydration because I'm not a thirsty person.
Yeah.
The only time I ever feel thirsty is when I'm giving a lecture or presenting and my mouth gets a bit dry from chat. So that's when I'm good at drinking water. But on the whole, I'm first to say that I am not a great drinker. I've got to keep that in mind.
So we need to drink more water. What about caffeine?
Right. So
we did touch on the coffee.
Yes.
Does it affect our perimenopause symptoms?
So we really need to be mindful of our caffeine after 2 p.m.
Okay.
So
that 3 o'clock coffee, it's not happening.
Not happening. And people are like, look, I can have my coffee and it doesn't impact my sleep.
Yeah.
I call BS on that.
Yeah.
You really need to be mindful of your caffeine intake. Not only are we dealing with the hormonal insomnia kind of symptoms, but if we're mixing that with some caffeine, which is designed to keep us alert, then we've got to just go, you know what, let's just stop it.
Yeah.
At 2 o'clock, no more caffeine. The thing with caffeine also is that it can make us shaky.
Yeah.
It can, you know, start to make us a bit more anxious.
Yes.
So there is a point.
Yeah.
You know, 2 cups a day, I think, then call it quits.
Especially in this phase, most definitely. So we need to be looking at all the different elements.
It can exacerbate flashes as well.
I know. And I think someone asked me, like they said, I think I've had a hot flash. And I went, you haven't had one. When you have one, I feel my face was physically burnt from the heat on my skin on my face. So knowing that I'm drinking too much coffee, I'm not drinking enough water, like that's going to exacerbate that hot flash.
Yes.
So that holistic picture is vital, from hot flashes to night sweats to anxiety.
Yes.
What I get from what you're saying is that holistic picture is what we need to be doing.
Yes. Yeah. Back to our chair.
Yeah. My legs aren't okay.
Yes.
I'm not okay.
That's right.
Yeah.
Your nutrition, your fitness, your sleep and your joy or your stress.
Your stress, yeah.
That's right. So making sure that you've checked in on all those things and at least from what you are capable of doing for yourself and being in control of, checking in on those things allows you to take some responsibility and put your best foot forward.
Absolutely.
Before we start looking at things like hormone replacement.
Yes. That's right. That's the conversation I wanted to have with you. It's like, what are we looking at? What does it sound like? What's happening to us? Mm. Let's have these conversations in the narrative, because there obviously is a place for medical care and the practitioners.
Yes.
But we have to have that responsibility of what we're going through and taking control of it. And let's get through this openly and honestly and as healthily as we can to reduce mental health issues, heart disease, cancers, everything that's happening to us on the other end. So I really, really appreciate you coming today to talk to me about this. And I know once this airs, our audience will have a million questions for you.
Mm.
So I'd like to have you back again, because I think that having these conversations with you will help us greatly. If you're welcome to come back and have another chat with me.
I feel like
there's so much.
The surface.
Absolutely.
And I just feel like as women, we need to learn to talk to ourselves kindly.
Yeah.
We are our main voice that we hear all the time.
Mm.
And so if we're telling ourselves that, you know, we look horrible, we're getting fat, we're not, you know, not keeping up with our peers at work. Da-da-da. If we are negative talk in our head, we need to say, you know, shh. And start to be kind to ourselves because
it's not our fault.
We are magnificent.
I know.
We like think of ourselves.
Our bodies do the most incredible thing. It's just the thing it's going through now.
That's right.
And it's not our fault. It's just a process.
It is.
Yeah.
Be kind to yourself. Sometimes we stuff up.
Mm.
Sometimes our mind might not be sharp. Sometimes we might snap at our partner. Sometimes, you know, things aren't going beautifully.
Yeah.
But give yourself a bit of space and grace and go, okay, I've stuffed up there.
Mm.
Sorry to whoever has encountered me during this moment of peri rage.
Yes.
Or whatever.
Well, that's a great term, everyone. Peri rage is a real thing.
It's a thing. And just go, okay, bit of grace, bit of kindness, talk to myself nicely, and you will get through it.
Absolutely.
We're all in this together.
Yes.
All of us ladies who are in this phase.
Yeah.
Might be a long road, might be a short road, but there's...
We're all going to go through it at some stage.
Share the conversation, open the dialogue.
Absolutely. Now, as this show is based on the fundamental belief that we can do better and be better by not only learning as much as we can, but finding out what works for us, we end each podcast interview with a quick question.
Oh, gosh.
No, it's okay. Giving us a little more insight into our wonderful guests. What did you want to be when you grew up and why?
Interesting. Okay, when I was little, I was obsessed with Kylie Minogue. Absolutely obsessed with Kylie Minogue.
Who couldn't be in the 80s?
And I used to go to my grandma's house, read her TV Week magazines, cut out clippings of Kylie Minogue, and I wanted to be her. I was like, wow, I want to sing, I want to act, I want to da-da-da-da. But I was a very shy young girl, and of course, as a little girl, I'm just like, well, that will never be me. Interestingly, I got to high school and I took up drama and performing arts, and I was just like, anyway, look, I don't want to be Kylie Minogue. But I wanted to perform. And so I actually started my career as a school teacher.
Amazing.
And that was a way for me to have a creative outlet as a dietitian, still have this urge to be creative. So I created an alter ego called The Food Detective.
Mm-hmm.
I recorded a children's album.
Amazing.
Created a stage show.
We'll pop the link for that in this episode's show notes.
Sure.
Yeah.
So part of me, who always wanted to be Kylie Minogue, kind of got a little glimpse of that and part of
you're
that.
You're sharing the joy. That's what it is.
That's right. Yeah. So within me has always been a bit of a performer. And as a gym instructor, I had that as an outlet as well.
Absolutely.
I wanted to be a performer of some description.
Absolutely brilliant. And yes, no, our audience will check out your alter ego, because I think that's amazing, such a wonderful thing to do.
Yeah,
lovely. Well, thank you for joining me today, and we are definitely catching up soon.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Before we officially end the show, it's time for the legal information. Please be aware the information and advice provided on this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended to provide legal, professional, or medical advice, and you should not rely on it as such. Always consult with a qualified professional.
We do not accept any responsibility or liability for any actions or decisions you may take based on the information provided on this podcast. Please seek professional advice appropriate to your situation. Thank you again for listening. See you soon.